Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, we have a panel discussion on fermenting with quince. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Cider Chat is in its sixth season, and right now I am counting up to the 300th episode, which is a little over 30 episodes away. And when you've hit like 267 episodes, 30 episodes is like nothing. It's kind of crazy. I have like all the recordings already kind of set up, which might sound really easy, but it isn't. There's a lot more editing to do. And there's a lot of work that goes into this podcast. And because of that, I asked for support for Cider Chat, and people do deliver. The wonderful folks who have become patrons of Cider Chat or have donated to Cider Chat via the donate button at ciderchat.com. There is a Cider Going Up campaign specific to commercial makers, so I'd like to give a tip of the glass to the following makers. One is Esoterra Ciderworks in Dolores, Colorado. So that's the Four Corners area of the U.S. And Spacetime Mead and Ciderworks is based in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. So that's on the eastern side of Pennsylvania. Insider Japan is the only bilingual Japanese and English quarterly online and printed magazine. Great stuff that Lee Reeve out of Insider Japan is always involved in. Then there is Duck Chicken based in London. That is Colleen O'Sullivan and James Mann. They've just been just really vocal supporters of Cider Chat and just wonderful people. Much like Albert Johnson of Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company based in Ross-on-Wye. So a big tip of the glass to the commercial makers at the Cider Going Up campaign page, which you could check out at ciderchat.com, and to all the other patrons who donate monthly via the Cider Chat Patreon page or the donate button at ciderchat.com. Up next, we have the Q&A with Fermentis, who has been sponsoring this podcast each week. And we really thank the Fermentis crew, specifically Kevin, who's going to be answering this week's question, which is, what yeast strains would you recommend for a cold, sweet French cider? Take it away, Kevin.
Hello, my name is Kevin Lane, and I'm the Technical Sales Support Manager for the Americas for Fermentis. Well, for a cold fermentation or for a sweet French-style cider, really we've tested all four of our products, all four of our yeast strains in the Saf Cider portfolio, the AB1, the Saf Cider AC4, Saf Cider AS2, and Saf Cider TF6. Now, in this colder fermentation, elongated fermentation, not completely dry, not completely finished fermentation, we found that all four of these strains really present interesting attributes. So to make a recommendation out of the four, really, that's more up to the cider maker themselves. You know, with our portfolio, we can say that the Saf Cider AB1 is going to be best for balanced ciders. The Saf Cider AC4 is going to be more for a fresh and crisp cider. Even in the sweet style cider, the AS2 is going to bring sweetness and complexity to the cider. And then the Saf Cider TF6 is really going to maximize the fruitiness. It's going to bring a lot of fermentation fruity character to the cider. So I can't make a sole recommendation for a cold or a sweet cider, because that really is going to be dependent, much like any cider, is going to be dependent on the cider maker and what they're looking for in the resulting cider.
Well, there you have it. To find out more, go to fermentis.com. I've been rolling out a series of episodes all featuring quince, which is a pom, by the way, within the same family as apples and pears. The first episode I'm going to recommend that you check out is episode 248, which was the New England Quince Taste Test 2020. That took place just at the tail end of 2020. And then there is the Grow Quints Part 1 and 2. And that was featuring Zeke Goodban, who's a renowned horticulturist, and he just absolutely delivered 100% plus more, all on all the intricacies of growing quints. Oh, it's a phenomenal resource. And then last week, we had Nan Stefanik, the gal behind the hashtag Grow Quints initiative. She founded the Vermont Quince Company back in 2012 and is just continuing to rise quince up into the spotlight where it belongs. And this week's episode on Fermenting with Quince is a panel discussion that was pre-recorded at CiderCon 2021. And so I think it's kind of the perfect ending for quince right now on this ongoing series to finish it off with how do you ferment quince, both as an adjunct to cider and also as a standalone libation. So it's really cool. And I'm just so happy that we had four different cider makers, one from the Pacific Northwest, one from the East Coast, and then two from the UK. I'm not going to introduce them straight up because I'll just be repeating myself as we kind of move into this podcast. But they're really cool people, and you're going to dig it. But before I go further, I want you to know that there's two different options for listening to this pre-recorded piece on Fermenting with Quince, the podcast that you're listening to right now. And also the video with the four makers. It was recorded via Zoom. That is going to be at the Cider Chat YouTube channels. And it's just going to be that piece on Fermenting with Quince. So there'll be a link to that YouTube video in the show notes. And with that, I'm going to bring you now to this featured presentation titled Fermenting with Quince. For this panel on Quince, I will be acting as moderator with makers from three different time zones. We have Art and Science, Dan Rinke and Kim Hamblin. They are based in Oregon. And you can see that this is their label here. All this artwork is done. All the labels at Art and Science are done by Kim. It's a very intricate process she does. It's absolutely beautiful. I want to just point out, you can see it's 100% forage quince. And the ingredients, there's a little disclaimer. It says, ancient Greeks associated quince with increased fertility. We make no such claims. A lot of mythology around quince, isn't there? All right. We also have Steve Salen from South Hill Cider. He is based in New York in the Finger Lakes region. I was actually at South Hill Cider when a basket of quince that had been forged was brought to Steve. I believe that that's the cider or the quince, I should say, that he's going to be talking about today. We also have Martin Berkeley from Pilton Cider. Martin is based in Somerset in the United Kingdom. And on the slide right now, you see that Martin is standing in front of cider, and that particular vat is keyed. It's a clear liquid on the bottom, and you can see the brown cap on the top. So let's talk a little bit about his labels here. There's two quince products. One is the Queen of the Brew, which is a Somerset keyed quince. And then Pom Pom, which is a keyed cider with quince. Again, just beautiful labels. And then we have James Forbes of Little Pomona, based in Herefordshire, which is, if you're not aware of how the geography goes, Herefordshire is to the north of Somerset, and they are both in the West Country to the west of London. James is standing here in the brand spanking new cidery that I was able to visit in 2018 again. And he's standing next to Riddling Racks for traditional style to make like a champagne style cider. And at Little Pomona, they have Do It Puritan, co-fermentation of apples and quince blended with peri pears, ice cider, and bottled condition. I'm going to take myself off of screen sharing right now, if I can. Let's see, stop the share and bring it back to the full panel. Let me close off my chat if I can. There we go. And bring it full screen because I am recording this and I want to make sure that I could get us all in there. Very good. All righty. So welcome, everyone. Now that we have the full panel here, if you have a glass or you have a bottle, if we could all raise it and cheers to 2021.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
All right. Best of luck. Best of health to all. Yeah. May the fruit be bright for 2021. All right. So how this panel is going to be going is that each maker is going to be discussing their different products. And then at the end, we'll have time for a roundtable. The following questions will be, what inspired you to ferment? And how did you source your quince varieties, and the products that I did mention already a little bit, and then any maker techniques. So I'd first like to hand it over to both Kim and Dan from Art and Science out in Oregon. It's about 10 a.m. in the morning there. Never too early to be drinking some good products. Let's begin there. What inspired you folks to be fermenting quince?
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. The inspiration really came back in 2013 when we were making our first cider. 13 was our first vintage, and Kim was out foraging in a friend of ours' orchard. And all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of grape harvest, going crazy, doing all the things I do for my normal day job. And she gives me a call, and she's like, "Dan, I found this thing. I'm not sure what it is. It's not pears. It's not apples, but it smells amazing." I was like, "Sounds great. Let's put it in there. Pick as many as you can." And so she picked some there, and then went on, as Kim does, went on a little rabbit hole of finding as much quince as possible. So that year we ended up blending it with our what we used to call back then our West Valley cider. We blended in 10% quince. In retrospect, we tasted the cider and we thought that it was maybe a little too dominating on the quince side, because at the time we were only making one product. We were making one thing, and it was supposed to be an apple cider.
The quince ruled it.
Yeah,
the quince dominated it.
So the next year we decided just to back off to like 1% quince. In 2014, it still dominated. It was 1% quince. So then 2015 came along and we decided we just do 100% quince. But at the same time in 2013 and 14, I wanted to keep things. But since me and Kim are, lean more on the natural cider making side, we didn't want to use enzymes. We didn't want to use calcium chloride. We didn't want to start putting a bunch of stuff into our products. But we happened to have a concrete fermenter, a 70-gallon concrete fermenter. And so that year, in 2015, we took our quince and put it into some we pressed it, milled it, kept it for a day as mash, and then pressed it and keeved it. And we had such a successful keeving. My thought process was that quince was just so, it was so high in pectins. It's the whole reason why everybody has quince trees in these old homestead orchards around here.
The old jelly makers planted quince. So a lot of these old homesteads that are, you know, turn of the century, 1900s for Oregon, not as old as East Coast or UK. But yeah, you know, they always planted quince trees. So there's often a quince tree in an orchard if you can find them, if they haven't been cut down. So we
Did you know any of the varieties, or have you been able to identify any of the varieties that you have?
No. Dan's much more of a variety oriented human. I don't really care. If I like it, I'll just use it. So, we have taken some sticks off of some of the trees to graft in our own orchard. And then sometimes they're just, there's one that they don't even know where it came from. So it could have been a wild seedling or something, but
it could have just been pear.
Yeah,
pear
who knows? You know, that one's actually amazing. So I dug up a lot of babies from it last year, just for fun to put around here. So
is your plan to continue foraging at this point, the quince, or because it does get a little sticky, doesn't it, foraging? Because you don't always know if it's reliable. And this is a product that you've been producing for a while that folks really love, and
yeah,
it's exciting. So how do you manage that going forward?
And you know, quince is like a cutthroat, it's like a black market quince world. I swear. Like, I became like a quince peddler myself. Like, I forged them, but people are like, quince, do you got any quince? Do you got any quince? They're like, quiet, have like 10. Okay, get out of here, you know? So it is a little bit between that and then it's renewed popularity. And then people just cutting the trees down because if they don't know what it is, like, they'll often just chop them if they change owners or whatever. But, you know, there's some farms where I go to, and if I don't show up, they're like, kind of like, where have you been? You know, like, the quince is waiting for you, you know? So it becomes like an odd relationship too. So I think I'll still continue the foraging just because I've been fun. And it is kind of a nice relationship with all these different people. And I like having the diversity across a bunch of different kinds. Here, I have some.
Beautiful.
Yeah, then we have some going. We're just finishing processing, so they've been in cold storage. But
now, some of these quinces, I imagine the shrubs, because they can be kind of shrub-like or tree-like. What is the largest quince that you're picking from?
Is it the largest tree? You know, they don't get
not too large.
That one's pretty tall, but I don't think it's the tallest, but it's the widest.
Bush. Yeah.
And it's got a beautiful like twist in the trunk, and it's split. So it's almost like a both a shrub and a tree. So it like kind of split in the middle. So it's got like two forms, and maybe they trained them, I don't know. But it was his family's property. So it was built in, I think, early 1900s. Beautiful house. And he said that Quince was in there since he was a kid. So.
And what season are you going out to pick the quince? And do you keep on going back to one tree waiting for it to kind of?
I mean, most of the time, you know, sometimes I don't have access to keep going back. So sometimes it's a one and done. And I try to like, you know, pick more when I know everything's falling. But the good thing about quince is if it hits the ground, it's usually fine because it doesn't, you know, it's so damn hard that it just doesn't really, every once in a while it might rot if it's kind of a moist fall. I mean, the last couple of years have been really dry in the fall, so it's not too bad. But one tree starts, my earliest one is in September, and it actually usually coordinates with Asian pears, which is kind of weird. That's my earliest tree. And then my latest one, I think, is early November. So it can be kind of a wide stretch. So we usually cold store them. So we put them in baskets and put them in the cooler and just cold store them so we have enough and we're at a place where we can actually get it done, you know. So some years are later than others.
Right on. Yeah, it's always changing. I'm wondering, when in the processing, can you give us any like tips or, you know, how it has been kind of working with the quince during that initial stage? Because they're, you know, typically dry, it could be juicy.
It's a total pain in the ass. We actually cut it. So a lot of them, you know, because sometimes it does rot because we do cold store it. So we end up cutting a fair amount of that out anyway. But it's actually helpful to cut it unless they're smaller ones. But most of them are, you know, pretty decent. Some of them are really big. So we end up doing some hand cutting. We did break our mill one year. So we go ahead and mill alone just like we do apples or pears. So one year we broke our mill, we broke the blade, so we had to get new blades, but kind of a hassle in the middle of the season. But then we press it just like we do apples too. But we have a bladder press, so it's a smaller system than most people.
So are you cutting it by hand when you're saying that? Are all the quinces cut by hand? Okay.
Yeah. I would like to do kind of romantic hand labor on everything, Rhea.
Okay. And that's why we love you. Do you have any maker tips for folks looking at working with quince and fermenting it? I mean, you're doing 100%, and that's pretty righteous because it doesn't give its juice up easily.
I actually find that we get more juice yield per pound on quince than we do, say, pears, simply because pears will lock up the press because of their, they're just so liquidy, they kind of lock up all the juice channels, you know. So, you know, in pears, we'll be using a lot of rice hulls, and quince, we would only consider rice hulls.
It's like building material it's weird because it's like, you know, most of the time you open a press and you dump the mash and it kind of like falls apart, right? quince, you open it, and it's like a rock. You have to break it to use it. Like in our one cider, we actually ended up giving some. It was our Fimble cider. So our friend, who's a friend of Dan's and a friend of mine from a long time ago, but he's a chef, and we gave him like a pile of the dried quince. So it was like these chunks of dried quince, and he put them in a smoker and smoked them, and then gave them back. So, and then we just steeped them in apple juice and fermented it that way. Oh. So that's a, we were doing smoked cider before smoke was really popular on the West Coast.
All right. I love it. Look, we're going to move on to Steve over at South Hill now. And if you could unmute yourself there, Steve. There we go. All right.
Yes, there we go.
And I'm going to bring you up as a main speaker on this recording for everybody. So, Steve, let's go with that same question. What inspired you to ferment with quince?
It started with Peter Hoover. This he's a guy that I learned a lot of techniques from, and a lot about cider apples. He just passed away last year. I guess it was a year and a half now, maybe. When he was, I don't know, around his age, well into his 70s. He would make brandy from apples. He planted a small cider orchard. I actually brought this bottle because I knew I'd mentioned Peter in this. This is the Stone Fence Farm cider. So this is a single orchard cider, which is made from an orchard that he planted about 25 years ago. It was a quarter acre with about 50 cider apple trees on larger semi-dwarf rootstocks. And he, in the Finger Lakes, he was one of the, like the grandfather of you know, bittersweet cider making anyway. He understood that you needed great fruit to make great cider. And he would forage a lot of the wild fruit around here. But then also about 25 years ago, he planted those trees because he knew he wanted a more reliable source of good fruit. And one of the things that he did every year was make his, he called it tooth and tonsil wash, but it was brandy that he made with apples, pears, cherries, and quince. It was primarily apples, but he would always harvest, he would make some really good cherry brandy, eau de vie, from some tart cherries. And then he would save the skins from that, freeze them, and throw that into his batch that he would make the brandy out of with the quince. So anyway, he was my intro to quince because I would help him forage. The first time I ever saw a quince was I was out foraging with him. This was probably around 2001, 2002. We showed up to these shrubs that just to me looked like these wild shrubs with all kinds of stems. It didn't look like a tree to me. And it had these incredibly aromatic, like, I remember them as being like almost grapefruit size, but most years they don't get that big. And so, yeah, I helped him forage those and throw them into his ferments that he was fermenting for distilling. He wouldn't ever put that in his cider that he would drink as cider, but he would always include them in his eau de vie that he would make.
Nice. Wow.
And so some of those trees I still visit to forage. But they're very unpredictable when they have fruit and when they don't.
Hmm. Are there other quince around that those trees are? It's like in that area. There's a number of quince in the same area. Is that what I'm gathering?
Yeah. I mean, what Kim was mentioning, how all the old homesteads had their quince trees for jelly. It's the same thing here. A lot of the older houses here, I think, are probably from like the mid 1800s to late 1800s. And a lot of the people that planted fruit planted some quince. So there's some of that scattered around. But also I'm really fortunate. There's an apple grower. He's actually pretty far away. This is the fruit that I made this cider out of. This quince came from a guy named Jim Bittner, he's one of my organic orchard resources. There's a lot of people in Ithaca that grow organic orchards. We have a great network of people to share info with. But this guy, he also grows cherries, apples, quince. You know, he's a pretty diverse fruit grower, and he's been doing some organic production on higher density scales. And so, I call them all the time, questions about how to deal with weeds on a bigger scale now that I have, you know, more acres than I had when I started. And he has 50 quince trees. And so it's pretty awesome that he actually, you know, manages them. And I actually bought this fruit from him. It's the first time I've had quince that I didn't forage. And I called him to find out what it was too, because he actually knows the variety. He says it's Aroma Tenaya. How I would sound it out. It's a Russian variety. And he planted a bunch of Russian varieties, he said, but this was the only one that seemed very disease resistant. And so that's the only one he's going to deal with now. But all of them have issues with fire blight. And so that's something to be really aware of. He gave me a good pointer, though. He likes to grow them as a multi-liter, which quince likes to grow as a multi-liter. Like you can train it to be a single liter, but because they're so fire blight prone, if you have a multi-liter tree, you can save a bunch of the tree sometimes by just cutting out the leader that has the fire blight. So
that's a very good tip. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the quince that you've made that's going to be getting a label on. What can you tell us about the ABV? I always kind of like to start there because we have it's varying. I think Art and Science was about, if I'm correct, 8%. And see, what do you have there?
Well, I'm guessing this is in the 7 range. I haven't tested it yet. I mean, I still don't have a label for it. We're working on that right now. And I don't know the Brix because I did this as a maceration. And so I couldn't even estimate the Brix because by the time I pressed it, it had already been fermenting and I didn't check it ahead of time. And this is a co-ferment with Spygold. So it was co-ferment 50-50 with Spygold apples and this quince. And so I put them through the grinder and then macerated them for a few days. And it really took off. I mean, it was fermenting pretty hot. By the time I pressed it, I was a little concerned. But it turned out phenomenal. And didn't get any SO2, just wild ferment, no SO2. It's been in the bottle now for 6 months, I think. And it's incredibly stable still. I mean, it smells entirely like quince, like what Kim and Dan were saying, like a little bit of quince in there is noticeable. And this is like, I'm surprised there's any apples in there at all.
Well, let's describe how that quince smells for folks who haven't had that opportunity.
You know, I was trying. That's why I've been sniffing it this whole time since I opened it. Every time, it's hard for me to put a word on it, but I know, like, I actually get a little bit of vanilla from it, but there's no wood involved. I did this entirely in stainless. I mean, it's very floral, but I don't even know what kind of flowers it smells like. Like, to me, it actually reminds me of a tropical air. That I don't know what it is. Like my wife and I, we got married in 99 and we went to Costa Rica for our honeymoon. And like, that's the only thing that can come to mind is like walking through fruit markets in a tropical place. Like, I don't know what to even put on it. I get a little, maybe some like Meyer lemon. But all these are just like a far grasp. I can't even put it into words. It's just very floral, very tropical. It just smells like quince.
That's perfect. Yeah. I love that tropical air. That's an awesome descriptor. All right. I wonder, you talked a little bit about the process, and I just want to go back to Art and Science. That's a 7% from Art and Science. So you're in the same range. I think we're going to see something a little bit different from the UK, which we'll be going to in just a moment. But Steve, is there any like maker tips that you see that would be good to kind of pass on for folks?
Yeah, just that. I don't think you could just grind them and press them. That's the one thing. And I'm looking forward to hearing what everybody else says here, because in the past, like when Peter worked with the quince, we would grind them up and we would just put the quince solids in with cider that we pressed. So we would press the apples and then we would put the solids from the quince in with the cider to extract everything it could from the quince, because it didn't want to just give up its juice like right away. But it sounds like macerating it overnight is enough, if Kim and Dan have experience with that. So I'm curious to try that. But that's why I macerated this one, where I crushed the apples and the quince together, and then I let let them macerate for a few days before pressing it. Also, I would say, yeah, sweat them, hang on to them as long as possible. And I think, you know, Kim mentioned that too, that you really, when they come off the tree, they're not ready. You really need to let them sit around, and sometimes for like a month. I mean, like way, I keep them way longer than I keep any apples. And they'll really develop way more aroma and get a little more ripe, a little more soft. So be patient. Let them start to, you'll start worrying about them a little bit, and then it's time to press them.
I love it. I love it. And that's kind of nice for, you know, cider makers, because you have all these other apples that need to be maybe perhaps pressed earlier. So quince is a good option coming in. All right. Well, thank you, Steve. We're going to be moving on now with Martin Berkeley of Pilton Cider in Somerset. And again, I'm going to take everybody off and just go to the main speaker here. Martin, same thing. You have a couple different things that we haven't talked about, which is the Kieved quince. But let's start first. And I did read your piece out of Graphwood, which was just, you know, awesome, of course. But let's talk about your inspiration behind fermenting with quince, where that started for you.
Sure. Well, I was over in the US, went to New York in 2018, came across this product, which we've seen already.
Martin's holding up Art and Science a quince bottle there, by the way. And that's what he's referring to, having had it in New York.
In a kind of cool beer bar in Brooklyn at the Owl Farm, where I also met Dan Pucci. So we were going through the bottle list together and came across this by Art and Science, which was the best thing I'd ever tasted at that time. So I thought that quince is cool. And I guess some of the issues in the UK with cider we have grapefruit, but cider doesn't have the best profile. So we're always looking for new ways to present it, new different directions to take it with. And I think there's a lot of fruit cider in the UK that maybe also doesn't have a great perception with the public. So if we were to release a cider, say made with black currants, it possibly wouldn't go down so well. Whereas quince, people aren't too sure what that is, and they can't quite put a handle on it quite so much. So a bit more interested to try it. So I came back from the US, and it was probably August time, so it was getting near to the season to start pressing. And I looked around to try and find some trees, but there weren't many quince trees that I could see in villages and things. But spoke to a guy who knew a guy who had a big commercial cider orchard where they're growing 180 acres of bittersweet fruit. But where those apple trees had died out over the years, they'd been planting quince trees. So much so that they had 100 quince trees. And the grower's wife had been making some cider herself from that. But basically they weren't being used. And 2018 was a big year for them, was the best crop they ever had. So me turning up and saying, "Have you got any quince?" They were kind of pleased with that idea. So we ended up harvesting 4 tons of quince in that first year. So it was a bit of a sort of a first trial on a big scale. So trying to follow up with this product that I love, that's decided the thing to do was to go for 100% quince product. So this was what we made. So we sweated the quince. We hand picked it also, which is kind of unusual to some extent in the UK, because a lot of apples and that orchard, all of the fruit there is machine harvested. So the guy wasn't interested in the quince. There are not people to go and hand pick 4 tons of fruit. So we had to do that ourselves. So it took a bit longer to collect the fruit and to press it. So we had our quince juice. And at the end of, we use a contract pressing facility where we go down and work with the guys there. So having pressed the quince through or get the juice out, we then had to start working on apples. But of course, the first apple juice that came out still had a lot of quince flavor in it. So there was so much so that we couldn't sell that as cider, couldn't make a cider product. So that ended up being a quincy cider. So that ended up being the best product because it was had some nice sweetness from the kieved cider, but it had just enough quince character to be a fantastic product. Whereas the 100% quince is almost getting there now after 2018. So it's needed 18 months in the bottle to calm down from its full-on profile at the beginning, really. But so it's turned out that in the future, the our quincy cider, if you like, our blend product is definitely the way to go.
What is the ABV on the two products? Because they're a little bit different than we're seeing in the U.S.
Yes, well, I guess we don't have quite the same sunshine, perhaps, that you guys do. 100% quince, which was still a good year, 2018, that's only 5.4%. And the cider quince blend, again, because we're keeving it, so we're trying to keep a low ABV anyway, so there's quite a lot of residual sugar still in that, and that's 4.8%. Again, in the UK, we have tax bans for cider duty based upon alcohol strength. So we're trying to keep within that if we can. I know James isn't so worried about that. So you can obviously charge more for a higher ABV product, but that's sort of kind of where we're aiming for.
I know. I'm really curious about keeving quince. How does that work, or are you blending it into a keeved cider? I just want to make sure that I understand what's going on there.
Our experience was that the 100% quince, although the juice was separating as if it was keeving, like you might say with a keeve, when it didn't follow the normal keeving process that a pure apple juice would. But the two products together, the quince and the apple, make a fantastic key in that, make a fantastic separation anyway, so you get a lot of pectin. But whether that necessarily leads on to being the same final result of being a stable product, I mean, they have done with us, and that has been a fairly reliable, but maybe the safer method is to make a key cider, which we can do perhaps more easily, and to make 100% quince, and then to blend them, because then you have more control over the final product that you're going for, because the quince is so powerful, as people have said beforehand. At least you've got some control over it, whereas if you blend at the beginning, then you have nowhere to go afterwards.
Martin, are you getting when you say that cider? Well, I'm not really sure what to call it, but I'm going to say the Somerset quince. Are you getting a lot of tannins on in the cider? When you say you want it to kind of like age a little bit, why is that? What are you tasting now or sensing now that you're hoping will kind of work its way through and condition?
Acidity and astringency. Yes, tannins in the original 2018. So in 2019, when the cider was the 100% quince was first bottled, yes, it was fantastically floral, an amazing aroma, but the taste was too much for most palates. You know, that we enjoyed it. It was a good drink, but for a UK market, I was still getting used to 75 cl cider. So 100% quince is a big step on, but now it has mellowed in the bottle nicely, and it is much more. But it's still at, you know, on the high end of our range as a niche product. But it is selling nicely now, and we've got enough to last until the quince come round again next year, because in 2020. There was a late frost, and those 100 trees had zero fruit. So we have no no new stock this year.
Wow. Well, wonderful. And do you know any of the varieties that you're working with at this point?
There's a little bit of a confusion between whether they are Siberian gold or Serbian gold. So one of those two. And there's a small amount of Champion, but which is the classic quince shape. But whereas the Serbian gold are more sort of round grapefruit like looking. But it's been grapefruit to work with in the UK, and there's been a bit of quite a bit of interest in the craft beer community as well. So we made some good mileage out of our pressed quince pomace. So we take that to a local brewer who then puts it in his boil and gets a huge amount of quince aroma from that. So we get some beer in return, and so it's a good deal for everybody.
Yeah, I would say so. That's fantastic. Well, that's pretty cool. Well, I'm going to take you off the main speaker and bring everybody up here again. And we're going to next move to James Forbes at Little Pomona up in Herefordshire. And let me put you on with the main speaker there, James. I don't see that you're muted. So let's bring you up and welcome you on board here.
Thank you.
Let's start with your own quince. What inspired you to start fermenting with quince?
It's kind of funny, really, because probably four other people on this chat have inspired me or inspired us to work with quince. So I guess, like in common with a lot of people, like my only experience with quince before starting to ferment it was Membrio with cheese. And like, I can take that or leave that. It's kind of fine, but it's not a great advert for quince. And I also tried a gin, which had been infused with quince, which was really horrible. So I had this kind of ambivalent attitude to quince. But when I was at CiderCon in 2018 in Baltimore, I think Martin probably told me to go and try this thing at Art and Science table, and Kim won't remember, but I remember her, and I tried the quince thing, and I really liked it. But I didn't actually think that much more about it. And in 2018, Martin brought an American cider maker to stay with us for a couple of days, a guy called Matt Sanford, who's in New York State. And I think you had been working with him on the quince, Martin. I think that's right. And when you delivered Matt to us, you also delivered this small cardboard box full of quince. And it was like the first time I'd ever held a quince in my hand. And, you know, the aromatics are just incredible. And I kind of at that moment fell in love with the things. And I've often said since then that if you hold a quince in your hand and you don't fall in love, you're probably dead inside. I mean, you can't not like... You know, they smell great and they look great, and they're amazing things. And then after Matt, the cider maker, left, they were sitting in the kitchen and they were smelling amazing. And I had this recollection of walking in an orchard that had about 20 quince trees. And it was Dragon Orchard in Putley, which is quite a famous orchard. So I made one phone call to Norman and Anne, and they said, well, normally they sell all of their quince to this gin guy who made this terrible quince gin, but for whatever reason he wasn't buying them this year, so they had a couple of hundred kilos and they gave them to me. Well, they sold them to me, and we made the first Do It Puritan from that. So that was the kind of story. It was like completely random and lucky, basically, as everything in my life, really.
Well, I know that.
And I'll come on to why Steve influenced us when we come on to the making of Do It Puritan.
Well, we heard a little bit about your sourcing of quince, but I know that recently you and Susanna have planted quite a bit of quince.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it's part of this thing of actually giving someone a quince. So we're tenants on a farm called Brookhouse Farm. And there's about 300 acres on this farm, which is probably tiny in the States, but it's quite big in Herefordshire. And Will Kirby, who owns the farm, is a really lovely guy, came down to the cidery in 2019 when we were, we do this ridiculous thing with quince. Where we, if there's any of the fuzz that you get on the quince, a kind of peachy fuzz, we actually brush it all off before we process the fruit, which is very time consuming. So we were, the three of us standing around doing it, and Will came in and went, like, what on earth are you doing? And I gave him a quince, and then he's like, wow, what's this? I went, it's a quince. He said, this is amazing. And he said, where did you get these? I said, Dragon Orchard. He said, oh, how much do they cost? And I told him, and he went, what? You know, cider apples are about 100 quid a ton. Quince is 1,000 quid a ton. I think Martin maybe pays a bit less because he's more shrewd than me. But so Will went, well, you know, we've got some spare land if you want to plant some. So it's like, so yeah, so he gave us a couple of acres, and we planted 56 trees last year. And this year we're going to plant another, we're going to take it up to 80. So what's that, 24, 34? Yeah, 24, another 24 trees. So we'll have 80 of our own trees. Because like Steve was saying earlier on, if you want to, it's great being in control of your fruit source, because you can then, you know, you're going to get great fruit every time. So so that's what we're really excited. And we planted four varieties there. We planted a Serbian Gold. We planted a variety called Portugal, a variety called Vranja, and a variety called Meech's Prolific. So
how did you come about wanting to plant those specifically? Because you are the one maker here who has actually planted your own mini quince orchard. How did you come upon those particular varieties?
We did a bit of research, I know somebody who is a great distiller and works with quince, so I had an insight from him about what might be good. We also, from Dragon Orchard, we've been buying Vranja and Meech's Prolific, so we knew they were good. And being an Italian friend of mine as well, we had an inkling that Serbian Gold and Portugal would be very good for quince, but we don't know, and we won't know for a couple of weeks, you know, two or three more years, until we get hold of the fruit. But so they're a slight gamble. The trees we're planting this year are going to be Vranja again, because we know that's a great variety for cider.
How much did Marco influence you from Italy?
Marco basically influences my every waking moment.
And I can understand why.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He's a very charismatic guy. So,
And has a quince product too, yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Wonderful. So let's talk a little bit about your quince, which is a co-fermentation.
Whoa.
Goodness, that's my cider here. I don't have it. It's kind of blowing up. Okay.
Wow, nice.
That was pretty good. let's talk about your product and the co-fermentation.
Yeah, so the product is called Do It Puritan backwards, so it probably pronounced something else. So in our it's Martin's fault, because he once described us as being a cider purist. So this was a challenge to ourselves. So all our experimental stuff is called Do It Puritan, and that usually involves us using fruit that in the UK is not permitted in the making of cider. So so we haven't actually made cider with Do It Puritan. We've actually made wine. And we're comfortable with that. It has a big tax implication for us, but we're kind of comfortable with that. So Do It Puritan is a wine, a cider that is kind of constructed throughout the period of its fermentation and maturation. So in the first incarnation, we started off by fermenting the quince and apples together, basically because it's what we had at the time. And because that worked so well, we've decided to continue that in 2019 and to continue that again in 2020. So in common with everyone else, in 2019 with this product, we milled and pressed the apples and quince together. We used Dabinet and Harry Masters Jersey, so two very classic late season cider apples, bittersweet cider apples. We milled them into the press and we left them for 36 hours, and then we subsequently pressed them. In this case, we pressed them into tank, And we got like just the juice was amazing that came off. And it was beautifully clear. And it was fantastic. And we ran it into tank, we let it spontaneously ferment, no SO2. And then close to the end of fermentation, we ran it into some white Burgundy barrels to finish its fermentation and then to age on the fine lees for a little bit. And then after a while, and again, there's no recipe with this. We're just tasting and tasting. And then we thought, well, this is looking good now. And then we wanted to bring peri pears into it. So we had some peri pears in barrels and we took some of that, blended that in. And then because it's sparkling to get the conditioning, and by this time we're in June, so everything is dry. We have no fermenting liquid to add to this. And we don't force carbonate. So we went to our trusty freezer where we'd cleverly frozen some apples, and we pressed those frozen apples to make a kind of to cryo extract the juice. So we've got very high Brix in that. So we blend in a component of that and then bottle it, and it undergoes a second fermentation. And then you end up with the Puritan. So it's kind of a careful tasting, watching, looking, and then working out what we have in the cidery that will go with it. And the final thing is this getting it bottle conditioned by adding ice cider, essentially.
So this is a if I'm correct, it's like a 7.5% alcohol by volume.
Yeah, I think it's 7.6, this one.
7.6, okay. Yeah. And can you give us any tasting notes that we could expect if we were having that in a glass right now?
Yeah, and I don't drink it all the time, but I've been tasting it every month since we bottled it. And every time I taste it, it's different. And it's great because all our products change because they're all live products. So they're all kind of evolving all the time. But like Steve was saying earlier on, and the other guys, this is hugely aromatic and it's very floral on the nose. It's got also kind of citrus zest. That's what I get. So I get these honeysuckle, jasmine, citrus zest. That's always what I get from the fresh fruit and in the bottled product. Right now, today, when it's on the palate, it's got this beautiful balance of the three components that are in it. So it's got this kind of lemony core that runs right through the whole liquid from nose to finish that's coming from the quince. But around that, you have this tropical fruit, and then you have these yellow fruits that are coming from the cider apples, so sort of apricot, peach. And then behind that, the peri pears are coming in with this kind of herbal, limey sort of thing. And then at the finish, it's all quince again. So it's like a kind of real procession across the palate. So today it's tasting as good as it's tasted, so I'm really pleased.
Well. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect day to have that. We need a little good tasting.
I'm very lucky, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
If it had been tasted bad, I'd have told you that as well. So you can believe it, basically.
I could count on you.
Yeah, awesome. So, this is great.
Well, thanks, James. I'm going to bring everybody up on the my gallery here again and bring it into view. Let's see if I got that here. Okay. View one more time. Okay, great. All right. Well, I'm going to now open it up. We've heard it from the four different sites. And if there's any questions that you had for each other, because I know when we all started hearing, everybody was making quince just, you know, not too long ago. And we have like the OGs out in Oregon. They're kind of inspiring us all. Any questions for each other?
I do have a comment real quick. We do also grow quince here in our orchard. So we have 50-ish quince trees.
This is a seedling.
Nice.
I planted some seedling quince.
Wow.
So this is just from seeds. So it's a cutie, but I can't believe they sell their leaves. But
And so also I wanted to mention that USDA's germplasm repository for quince is here in Oregon in Corvallis. And back in, when was that, 2015? Me and Kim went out there during harvest time and went through their collection and just tasted all the different quinces.
It was
they
super
had.
Fun. Very astringent on the mouth.
Yeah, yeah. My mouth was like trash for weeks afterwards.
Okay, my question though, I have a question. Sorry. How many does everyone spontaneously ferment on this thread?
We do, yeah. I mean,
for this particular product.
Yeah.
I mean, we do, but and then did anyone add SO2? Because we've added in the past, but not recently. So.
No, I didn't do that on this. It's holding up great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I think anything with quince in it. I mean, the last 2 years, anything with quince in it just likes to ferment, and it goes really not super fast, but it just goes really smooth. Yeah.
Brilliant. I think all apples. I mean, everything
does
it. I think.
Well, yeah, but I think quince for some reason must have a higher nitrogen content or something, because I was not able to. When we keeved it, we successfully keeved it, and it still did nothing for stopping or slowing its fermentation.
Really? Wow. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Right through.
I have a question about keeving it. Did either of you have luck keeping it without using enzymes and salt?
Yeah. So, well, I did add salt. So we had a concrete fermenter. So there's our calcium. And then I added table salt.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, you need a no PME.
No. We got them.
Cool.
God, no.
I'm really curious.
We are.
All right. I'm curious to keep. To try keep with it, because the added pectin seems like it would help. And I had a huge realization over the past couple of years on keeving and how all that pectin really clarifies all the other solids. Like, that's really the effectiveness of keeving is you're using that pectin to capture all the other solids in the juice, because the juice you end up after a keeve is just so clear. It's almost looks filtered.
Yeah, well, quince, like pure quince juice, when we press our juice, it's by far the clearest juice that we get. And like, it's delicious,
but
it's amazing, you know. Yeah.
When we press it, it's like white wine. It's like
yeah, exactly. It's really pretty.
It's actually clear.
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's like the perfect fruit to work with. It's so easy.
So when you keeved it, was it clear before the keeve? Is that what you're saying? Or no?
Yeah, absolutely.
It looked clear, but then it keeved.
Yeah, and then it keeved. Yeah, it started quaking. I got pictures of it. I'll text you some pictures.
Cool.
Can see it like at the beginning, you know, it just started getting the little globules forming up. And then we had a full-on brown cap within, I don't know, probably week and a half-ish. And then we held it in there for it was close to a month.
Although we're not keeping it anymore.
Yeah, we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't find any benefits to it. I actually prefer the barrel fermentation better. I mean, the reason why I wanted to keep it was to leave some residual sugar, but I couldn't. it just wouldn't stop fermenting. Like, it never slowed down after keeping.
Are you controlling the temperature, you guys?
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I mean, winters in Oregon are, you know.
It was outside.
You know, it's an average temperature of 48 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, so it's right in that range that you want to be keeping anyway.
Yeah. Interesting.
I have a little bit of a question here, because I've been rolling on a couple podcasts on quince and growing quince and working with some authors on the subject. And one thing that came to light was in extracting the quince, and what many people do with quince is to bake it. And I started thinking about brewing and how people make like a pumpkin beer and roast the pumpkin. And so when I talked to some of the people who I consider the queens of quince, they said, yeah, definitely roast it and then press it. Try that. And I know that quince are smaller than a pumpkin, but I just thought, like, wow, that would be just like incredible, because it does become like caramelized and set out a whole other taste profile. So with that, where do you kind of being the, you know, the early pioneers of quince fermenting on a worldwide scale, and there's a number of other people too, we know, but not that many commercially. Where do you see quince moving forward into the 2021s and going beyond?
Cult-like status?
Yeah.
I think baking is the only benefit. I think it would be a total pain in the butt, but I think it would actually, you'd get that beautiful color. That's the yeah, that pinkish orange color when you bake it. It's so pretty. You don't. I don't. I'd be curious to see how that changed, but that just seems like a
point. Which but when we're pressing it, the juice does turn out to be like that pinkish,
a tiny bit, yeah. Color. And then it turns into.
And then it turns into yellow after the oxidation happens and fermentation.
There's a lot of people planting them.
I do have a comment on it. This has nothing to do with cider, but the best food pairing or best use of quince as a food was a friend of mine that the chef came over and was making roasted root vegetables, and he threw in some quince in that, and it was amazing. If you have like the basic tones of the roasted root vegetables, the beets and the parsnips and the whatever else is in there, carrots. And then you have the high pop of acid and floral aromas of the quince. It was amazing.
Hmm.
I think you should just have blue cheese when you drink quince cider.
I agree.
Good tip. Like
pinky blue cheese, it's delicious.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that this is just the beginning of a long conversation on quince, and having this opportunity to hear from all of you and what you're doing, I'm kind of bumming that we're not all sitting around drinking quince right now. But that, you know, that's what the future is all about. And I'm on the page that it's going to be looking brighter. But I really want to thank you today for sharing your wealth of information. And it is, you know, a continuous art form in this way, what you're doing, and how exciting to have someone from, you know, New York State, the Finger Lakes, and Herefordshire up in the UK and Somerset and the Pacific Northwest. Once again, I just want to introduce everybody. So it is Kim Hamlin and Dan Rinke of Art and Science in Oregon. We have Steve Seenlin of South Hill Cider in the Finger Lakes, James Forbes of Little Pomona in Herefordshire, and Martin Berkeley of Pilton Cider in Somerset. Once I'd like to kind of end this session for now and raising a glass to you all and wishing you the best of health.
Cheers, you guys.
Thank you all.
Cheers.
Well, it's always fun talking to cider makers on how they are fermenting. I got to tell you, it never grows old. And what an exciting time for quince to really be rising like a phoenix out of the ashes and really taking the center stage once again, as it should be, because it is a grand pomp. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like ponds. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like pond.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!